In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAG10 for 10% off your first purchase.
Welcome to the Inside Carolina Podcast. I'm your host, Tommy Ashley. This is a special edition of the 40 Club. We are sponsored by Johnny T-Shirt and JohnnyT-Shirt.com. With the special edition of the 40 Club means special guest. And I've got two of them, at least one, but definitely two for me personally. And I'm going to kick it to the first one. Sherelle McMillan and I have not done a show in quite some time. Joey Powell has taken over my role as Sherelle's partner. So, Sherelle, I'll let you introduce the true special guest that we have today.
Yeah, so I think special is the right word. This is a woman who has done a lot in a short amount of time in collegiate athletics and now for USA basketball. So our guest is Jennifer Lynn Williams. Old heads might know her as JT from when she played at UNC. She played for 4 years at Carolina, was a team captain for two of them. Is that right?
Yep.
Yeah. And I see her as kind of like a bridge between really great eras of UNC women's basketball, kind of the Coretta Brown, Nikki Teasley, Laquanda Barksdale crew. And then she kind of bridged into what would become eventually the Ivory Latta years. So to me, she like has her hand in both kind of the old school UNC women's basketball team that was so good. And then the one that went to, I think, two Final Fours in consecutive seasons. Right now, she is the chief development officer of the USA Basketball Foundation, and she started that role in July. So I think that's where we wanted to start. Can you kind of tell us how that came to be? Before we go there, she was also an athletic director at Alabama State University for 3 years. Is that right?
Yes, I was interim for a year and then, 3 years.
Yeah. So obviously, again, well-traveled, done a lot of things, but want to start with your most recent role. Can you kind of walk us through that, how that happened and kind of what you do?
Yeah. So, well, thank you all for having me. And so with my role with USA Basketball, it just kind of came out of nowhere, to be honest. You know, I knew that I set a lot of goals. So I do a lot of career mapping, and I knew that my time at Alabama State, just for me personally, was going to be coming to an end, but just always just thinking about what's next. And so while I was pregnant, I was like 7 months pregnant, a friend of mine who works for USA Hockey reached out to me and asked me if I would have a conversation with the CEO just to kind of give him some names of some people who may be interested in the role. I serve on a lot of development committees that kind of oversee athletic development on the collegiate landscape. And so she knew I would have some names of people that could probably be recommended for the job. So I agreed. Myself and the CEO had a very casual conversation. It was super organic. Just through our conversation, we knew a lot of people in the same circle. He had actually started at USA Basketball with Coach Tracy Williams Johnson, who was my coach, was one of the assistant coaches when I was at Carolina. So just knew a lot of people in the same circle. We talked. I thought it was a cool position. But again, at that time, I was really focusing on having a healthy pregnancy and finishing that up and then getting my student athletes back to return to play in January because we did not participate in fall competition. We opted out, but people would start playing in January. So that was kind of my focus. Gave him some names, just thanked him for, you know, the time and, you know, told him I would help in any way. So I had my son January 2021 and my friend reached out and was just basically was like, hey, the job is posted. you know, I wish you could have expressed more interest because he really, really liked you. And so some things that kind of changed with the job a little bit, had more of a conversation, and it just kind of went from there. You know, it wasn't something that I had saw and, you know, initially back in November and was like, yes, I need to get out, but it just came about. And it was kind of like the job was just meant for me, what he was looking for. My background was in external fundraising, marketing. And so it kind of like this position was made for me. And so after just kind of filling it out, because I always tell people, you have to interview as well. Like, you're being interviewed, but you have to interview the organization to make sure it's about fit. And so I just felt it was a great fit. And my husband was on board with it. So we made the leap to Colorado Springs in August.
So what's it been like? What are your kind of primary responsibilities? Like, what is it that you do on a day-to-day?
Yeah, so the foundation was established in the end of 2019, right before the pandemic kind of set in. And so the gentleman there that was my predecessor, he ended up leaving probably within, I think, maybe 7 months. And my goal has really been to come in with the foundation. We support USA Basketball, specifically the youth programming, raising money, obviously, for youth programming. We want to promote social responsibility. We want to champion women and empower our youth. A lot of people think of USA Basketball and they think of our Olympic teams, but it's so much more. I don't think people understand a lot of the coaches' academies we put on our 3x3 team that is new to the Olympics, but a lot of tournaments you have to play in, even build up points to qualify for the Olympics. So we sponsor a lot of programming that people don't know, and it takes funding to support that. And so my job is really to oversee the foundation and find ways to support that through gifts, donations, as well as in-kind and corporate sponsorships as well. Really have been just surveying the landscape, looking at the platforms we're using, connecting with our donors because they hadn't been touched during that lapse of leadership in the foundation. And so really reconnecting them, thanking them, and then also looking to cultivate and prospect new donors to come and on board and support what we have going on.
So you kind of went where I wanted to take it there when you said a lot of people think USA Basketball is strictly Olympic teams and what they see every 2-4 years or whatever. Talk a little bit more about what all is involved with USA Basketball, because I think the biggest thing is, like you mentioned, empowering women, the youth side of it. Just share some more about that so people get a good idea of it's not just – the pro guys going out there and playing in the Olympics.
Exactly. Yeah. My focus is really on growing the game of basketball and going into underrepresented populations, going to areas where there may not be as many resources, and really trying to teach those skills that I learned as a basketball student athlete to our youth, because not everyone's going to be an Olympian. So how do we develop champions and pros in life? That's really what my focus has been on. But again, we have clinics all over the country. Now, COVID did stop that, obviously. But our youth, we have a whole youth and development unit that goes out and put on these clinics. Like, I believe they're in DC right now. And then under that unit as well is our new 3-on-3 entity, which that was new to the Olympics this year. And so they manage that. And we have our AmeriCup qualifiers in Miami in a couple of weeks. So the coaches' academies, we just did a Women's in the Game event where we really focus on empowering women and champion women and teaching them about how to get connected to sport. You see a lot of men in sport, in athletic administration, the pros, but how do young women break into that mode? And so that was a lot of what the Women in the Game program, and those are programs we want to continue to put on. Another program that I'm going to be working toward is the 50th year of Title IX, and we will have activities. You know, I'll put on something at the Final Four, the Women's Final Four, to celebrate that. And so we are just looking at ways to highlight the game of basketball and bring people under the fold who may not know about, you know, what sport can do. But we believe that basketball is just such a great sport, and it teaches you so many life skills. You know, take the other skills, like just being on the court, but off the court skills that will really help you be that champion in life.
I agree with 100% with that. I mean, if you play a team sport, especially, you get so many skills that you can use forever. And basketball is probably one of the best because there's not too many people out there, but there's more than just you, and you have to get it done. Let me ask you a question as I've listened to you talk. You mentioned career mapping earlier, and what was it like being a young woman deciding what you wanted to do?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I always knew that I wanted to do something that had to help people. I wanted to help people. When I came to Carolina, I knew that I loved sports. So figuring that out, at first I wanted to go into journalism. Obviously, Sherelle and I, we were in the J school together. But I knew that I never wanted to coach, but was really trying to figure out how I could impact the sport that I loved and help people and help student athletes. That was kind of what I was trying to figure out at Carolina, the best way to do that. And so the idea of working in athletic administration, you know, Dick Fedor, he was the AD while I was there, and he was very present. He came to all of our games. I was on SAC. I was the women's basketball representative. So, you know, between working with Larry Gallo and Dick Fedor and then Dr. Miller, you know, I saw what administrators did. So I always knew, I was like, if I get into athletic administration, I want to be an AD. And so I actually met the family who endowed my scholarship. And that kind of put me on that path with fundraising, because I really didn't know a lot about development and fundraising. And then through the Rams Club, we used to have a banquet, and I don't know if they still do that, where you can meet the donors and then folks who have endowed, if you're one of those endowed a scholarship. And that really opened my eyes to the inner workings of an athletic department. Once I graduated from Carolina, I did work with Fox Sports Net South in Atlanta. And it was an internship opportunity through the ACC, where they took three student athletes from each ACC institution, and you pretty much interviewed at the ACC offices. And so I selected Fox, they selected me, but I didn't feel fulfilled there. I knew that it was more to the story. People, you know, tell you, oh, you're so great, you should stick to it. But internally, I just felt like I just wasn't happy doing that in that role. So I had a scholarship through the WBCA. It was the Robin Roberts Sports Communication Scholarship. And I always wanted to go to a historically Black college and university. And so I knew that I was going to use that postgraduate scholarship to go to an HBCU. And I was familiar with North Carolina Central because it was literally right up the street from Carolina. And I had some friends who went there. And so I ended up going to North Carolina Central. But to say all that is that I really focused, when I decided to step away from television, I really focused on kind of my mapping of how I would get to that ADC. And to me, fundraising and going through the external route was going to be the fastest way for me. And even though there wasn't a lot of women, especially women of color, that was in fundraising roles, that was external marketing, I felt like that was something that I could break that barrier and have success doing just with my skill set. And so that was kind of how I got locked in on the route that I wanted to go through, which was development, fundraising, and then ultimately being an AD.
So I wanted to go back just a little bit. You talked about basketball, and you want to show people, especially, you know, young girls, young women, what it can do for them and what it can do for their life, and how their life can change through basketball. This is a very high level answer, and I'm putting you on the spot, but tell me how just being involved in basketball for all these years has changed your life.
Oh, that's a great question, Sherelle. It's really instilled confidence, a lot of confidence in me. I was always a confident kid, but it just took it to a whole nother level. When you can go out there and have success despite obstacles and, you know, just hardships, it really teaches you resiliency, and it teaches you something about your character. And I tell people all the time, if it wasn't for me being a student athlete, a basketball student athlete, I wouldn't have been able to lead a Division I athletic department during a pandemic. And, you know, the skills I learned, perseverance, hard work, you know, just resiliency, never quitting, those are all skills that came through basketball. In order to be the best, you got to work the hardest. And I wanted to be the best basketball player. And so I was always in the gym. but it taught you how to flex and pivot. COVID taught us that we have to be flexible and be able to pivot. And so those are all skill sets I learned, not to get frazzled under pressure. I tell them never let them see you sweat. You know, people would never know some of the things that I was dealing with as an athletic director. One of few female athletic division one athletic directors in the deep South. You know, it was hard being a woman and being an AD in a leadership role in the deep South. And it's probably anywhere, but I'm gonna say specifically in the deep South. And so, but we still had success. We won 43 championships while I was the athletic director at Alabama State. We won the Commissioner's Cup, which is given to the top team in the conference 6 years in a row, three out of my 4 years at the helm. And so, you know, all of this is I attribute to just being a student athlete, the competitiveness. I don't like to lose. A lot of people know that. But if I do, when I do lose, I'm gracious with it, but I don't like to lose. And so I feel like I instilled that in my student athletes and my coaches. And that's why we were so dominant when I was at Alabama State.
So I want to take you back to, let's say, March 9th, 2020. That's when my youngest daughter was born. So that is 2 days before the NBA shuts down. Tell me how much different the world was, you know, as that week started and everything seemed okay. And then the world changed in, you know, a couple of days. How did you as an athletic director start to process everything and all the changes that you would have to make over the next year?
Yeah, it was a lot because just the week before I was in Texas, I was in Houston for our last basketball contest before we went to the champ to the conference tournament. And so you kind of was hearing the rumblings internally before I got announced publicly about conferences shutting down their basketball tournaments. But my immediate focus shifted to my student athletes. You know, everything was set in stone that we would not be playing. I've had a meeting, emergency meeting with our coaches, and I instructed them to get on the phone and contact and have, you know, get their kids to make sure their student athletes were okay. Because, you know, you work so hard as a student athlete and then to have something just taken away from you, that's hard to process as an 18 to 21 year old. I mean, it was hard to process at my age. So, you know, but as adults, we have to be strong. And so I wanted my coaches to make sure they contacted our student athletes. And then it was going into our campus shutdown. So how do we get our kids home safely? You know, I'm at an institution that's a limited resource institution. It's not like Carolina, a lot of first generation college students. And then I have a lot of international students and the borders were shut down. So making sure they were safe. So it went into planning mode. But again, as a, you know, one of the skill sets of being a student athlete, you know how to flex, you know how to pivot and you're cool under pressure. And so I was able to, I had an executive staff, we got everything together. We figured out, you know, how to keep our international students safe, those who could not get home, how to provide support for them and our coaches through counseling and just making sure they understood that their mental health matters and that we were here to talk to them. So it was crazy, but we managed and all of our student athletes were able to get home safely. Those who weren't, we were able to have housing on campus and the NCAA did provide for grants to use grant money to be able to take care of those students who didn't have a place to go.
Do you think people truly understand how trying a time that was for everybody, you from the athletic directors, but especially for the students, athletes? Do you think people understand that?
I don't think so. I really don't. And I had to take it back to, I don't know how I would have responded as an athlete during that time. Our student athletes who went through the pandemic are just so resilient. You know, it's been hard. And, you know, especially I think about my spring sports, you know, to have their seasons just completely taken away from them, you know, that's hard, you know. And so it was a challenging time. I don't think people on the outside looking in, because I think selfishly they just wanted to see sports and they wanted to have a NCAA tournament and be able to come together. And because the NCAA basketball tournament is phenomenal, it's the best time of the year. And so I think selfishly people were like, you can still do it, but they didn't really understand how this pandemic was spreading and how, you know, it really was becoming a health concern. And so then the mental anguish that our student athletes and our coaches had to deal with, because coaches, like, they're normally A-type personalities, like to be in control. And I used to tell my coaches, COVID has to control now. We just have to adapt and flex. And so I personally don't, unless you kind of live through it and saw it every day, I don't really think the outside people looking in could really understood what was going on and all the changes we had to go through to get our kids home and then to bring them back when it was time and testing. It's just, it was a lot.
One more on that, and then we're going to go back to your UNC days. When you had to tell your student athletes and your coaches that they weren't going to be playing, you know, for a season, how hard was that?
It was extremely hard. You know, especially, like I said, a lot of our kids were going into championships. So our winter sports were about to start. The part of your season you really look forward to, a championship. And then spring sports, just, they didn't even get off the ground. And I had just hired two new coaches in my spring sports. So it was hard for them as well. But, you know, to look them in the eye and just tell them, you know, that it was over, it was hard. You could see the disappointment. They want to play. You know, I wanted them to play, but I knew that at the time it just wasn't safe right now because it was so many unknowns. And so I do think for the most part, you know, our kids internalized it. I always tell them, give it a 24-hour rule. You let it hurt, you know, do what you need to do, cry it out, have the ugly cry, whatever. But then at 24 hours is up, we got to move on. And, you know, our kids, they're champions. You know, like I said, we come from a championship mentality when I was at Alabama State. And so we talked about what the next year looked like. And I think once they knew that they could have their year back in scholarship, that helped a lot. And I was on D1 council during all those conversations. And the folks who serve on D1 council, those ADs, SWAs, conference commissioners, it was a tough time. And I think that a lot of those folks who were in D1 council, because our meetings went from like once a month to every week to figure this out. And so I think a lot of the administrators don't get, and not that we want a plaud on the back or the accolades, but it was a lot of hard work in mapping through this and figuring it out. So kudos to the doctors who worked, you know, to give us information, to our council, and to really help us figure everything out. And then to just the administrators who came together to figure it out, because no one's been through a pandemic. So this was new to everyone.
Yeah, I don't think the common person, me included maybe, understands that you're an athlete, you're a student athlete, and then it comes up and then it's over. And then what? Because a lot of these kids, young men, young women, they don't really have a lot to go home to. They have college life. And even at a school like Carolina, there's so much more involved than just, you can't play this sport, where it's like, where am I going to live? Where am I going to eat? You know, what am I going to do? How am I going to stay healthy? And to get them all back and get back to where we are now, where sports are happening. I mean, it's still a little weird in some situations, but I think folks like yourself and so many others and the athletes themselves, I mean, I don't think that we can show as much gratitude as necessary for everything people did, like you and your shoes at Alabama State.
Yeah, it was a challenging time. But again, I had a great team. It wasn't just me. I had an awesome team. And then just a great, our student athletes really, they locked in. That's why we made sure that the resources for mental health services was just heavy, whether it was virtual, you know, those who were still on campus, that we had that aspect, because we knew it would be tough. A lot of our student athletes, this is their family, you know, Alabama State, their teammates, that's their family. Some of them didn't have places to go. And so that was hard. And so we did allow, you know, and I was thankful, you know, that the leadership did allow for those who may not have been international, but didn't have anywhere to go, to still remain on campus. Because we couldn't have our kids be out in the streets. And so thankful for the NCAA for giving the grant money to support, but it was a hard time. And I don't think, you know, the person, people who aren't in our world as administrators understand, because the nurses, you know, thank goodness for our student health, for our nurse, you know, our doctors on campus, because they worked tirelessly. Our sports medicine staff, you know, they were, to me, the unsung heroes throughout all of this, because they were on call 24/7, especially when we had our kids come back with the testing mandates, the contact tracing, the isolation, the quarantine. It was a lot. I tell people all the time, I feel like I have a third degree in COVIDology, because I mean, I'm like, I know everything from PCRing to antigen to swabs now and self-home kits. It's so much that goes into it. But we were resilient. I think all of the college administrators and the athletes across had one goal, and that was to return to their sport safely. And it's good to see now that we are getting back to some normalcy, but it's still, the pandemic's still here. It's just, you know, we are better equipped and have more knowledge on how to kind of manage it.
Yeah, that book will be one to read. Well, nowadays it'll be something streamed on Netflix or whatever that people watch. So let's transition back. And I'm going to steal Sherelle's question. How does a woman from Detroit end up in Chapel Hill? Tell us that story.
That's a good question. So Carolina was actually really late to the game recruiting me. I'm their first player for Michigan, so I don't feel that bad. Like, it's not like, because I was a top 25 player, so maybe I just wasn't on Coach Hatchell's and Coach Calder's radar at the time, because they just didn't come up to the cold to get people. But they actually saw me in D.C. I think it was at a junior national or junior Olympic tournament, and Coach Hatchell called me from Hawaii on her Nike trip, and I had like a voicemail when I got back home and was like, you know, we want to offer you, we want you to come on a visit, we want you to be down the first visit to be us. And I couldn't believe it, because I was just like, my dad started going crazy, like, that's Michael Jordan school. Because like I said, I got letters from Tennessee, from Duke, from Notre Dame, Virginia, Georgia Tech, Miami, Southern Cal, like all these other schools. And I was just like, dang, well, Carolina. And I didn't think, you know, because I actually was on my way to Colorado. They were the first school that sent me a letter. I love their coach, built a relationship with them. But Carolina came in, and I came on my visit. In Michigan, we actually played basketball in the fall, which is now different. It's changed now. But when I was in school, we played in the fall. And so I wasn't able to get out on the first week. They wanted me to come down when it was a football game and everything. But I came the second week of September, and I had a blast. The people were so nice. I was remember walking on Franklin Street, and people kept just smiling and speaking. And you don't get all that in Detroit. Like, it's really kind of, you know, mind your business, keep your head down, and get to where you need to go. And so that was something new. And then it was super sunny. It was, the skies were Carolina blue. And I just remember, you know, my dad was like, hey, do you want to commit here? And then I was like, well, let me just wait and get out the element, because I'm calling the element. But then when I got back to Michigan, I was like, yeah, I'm going there. And that was my first visit. I ended up, like, that was my only official visit. I took unofficial visits, but that was my only official visit. And I was just knew I was, you know, you just know. When you know, you know.
So how did you, I'm curious, how did you call the Colorado coach and be like, hey, I know you spent all this time recruiting me, but I'm going to Carolina.
It was tough. calling Still Berry at the time, because I did build up a relationship with her. And Debbie Ryan, too, at Virginia. They came to my high school, and I spent the whole day with Debbie Ryan. So, but my dad, again, you know, it was accountability and responsibility. He made me call everybody. And, but to me, that teaches you how to step up and have tough conversations, with help me be an AD and in my administrative role. It was hard, but, you know, they thanked me, and it was a respectful exchange. And they told me that if things didn't work out at Carolina, I was always welcome to transfer to Colorado. And to me, I thought that was classy. And so, yeah.
And now you're in Colorado.
Yeah, you
know. I know. I said, it's crazy how the universe works. And let me tell another story. So I remember when Syl Berry actually came to my home, she told my parents, myself, that in 2003, that NCAA tournament they were going to host whatever teams came out there was going to have a hard time breathing, and they would make it out of that like section, that region. So we, Carolina, ends up going out there as one of the teams. We were the 3 seed. Colorado, I think, was the 6, and Colorado ends up beating us. So I lost to Colorado in my last game. Yeah. Mm. Yep. I know, right?
It works. It comes around.
Yeah. You know, they tell that story on tours when you go on campus, that Phillips Hall is based upon a building at the University of Colorado. So there's some linkage there too.
I hadn't heard that story. I didn't know that.
I used to give tours, so that's one of the things. Okay. listeners, if you hear this and I said it wrong, please correct me. But I'm pretty sure Phillips Hall was designed after like a building at the University of Colorado Boulder. So there you go, random Carolina campus trivia. So tell me, what was the highlight, or give me some highlights from your Carolina basketball career? Some of the things that, I won't say how long ago it was, but some things these years later that you remember now. When I joke on her, I'm joking on myself too. So
yeah.
Well, I mean, I was a little bit before y'all, so I mean, come on, man.
Oh my gosh, so many memories. I'm glad we didn't have Facebook. Like Facebook came out just like our last year at Carolina. But all these social media, I'm glad that we did not have that when I was in school. But some memories, I thoroughly enjoyed. We took our international trip. We went to Australia. So that was just, and we got to fly like first class there. And it was amazing. Like we were there for 2 weeks, just a great time. Just being with my teammates, you know, we had a fun group. We knew how to have a good time. We had a good mix of people. And then around the other athletes, you know, that was our family. You know, we hung out a lot with the football team, men's basketball, obviously, volleyball, because we all shared Carmichael together, and softball. So the camaraderie and the support, I mean, the track team, I remember I could not make my mile, and Coach Hatchell had the rule, like, if you don't make your mile, you don't play. And so they didn't tell me that on my visit, because I would have been running some miles in Michigan, because I just don't, that wasn't my thing. And so I remember the track student athletes, they were out there supporting us and helping us run and giving us tidbits on, you know, how to, you know, make the mile. And so it's things like that, that people don't see that support. And, you know, going to obviously the NCAA tournaments was a fantastic experience. And just, you know, the sport, like, while I didn't like practice, I mean, we had some funny moments. I love the games, you know, just, you know, you go out there, especially our games against Duke, obviously, always good games. I think they blew us out 1 year in Cameron. It was like a snowstorm. I'm blaming on the snowstorm that came in. But we always
Why'd y'all
had
show
really,
up? Wait a minute. Why'd y'all even go over there?
I don't know. We should have just said the ice on 55, 54. We couldn't make it. But you know, it was just always heated competitions. And I miss playing the game. Like that, the games were just phenomenal. I can't even experience, like, just put it in words. Like going into Cameron, even for the women's game, is crazy out of control. And NC State, I remember them playing the Smurf song on the PA when we were warming up. And, you know, they just take it to another level at NC State, but that's a whole nother conversation. But I love my experience. It's hard to just pinpoint one thing, but everything was great.
What was your record against Duke?
Okay, so I'm going to say that we won once against Duke. Some teams didn't win at all. We won my freshman year, senior day against Duke, but then we lost in the ACC tournament against them all my years. We made it and we end up losing. And my junior year hurt because we were up, I think it was like 2 minutes left in the game. And we.
Was that the one on Martin Luther King Day?
No, this was at the ACC tournament.
Oh, at ACC. Okay.
Yeah,
gotcha.
This was.
Okay.
Yeah. And we just, we thought we had it. And that one hurt.
So would you say those are, and I'm sorry, Sherelle, I'm bad for this. I told you I wing it.
No, you're good.
What was the toughest part of being a student athlete at Carolina? Whether on the court or not. Preferably not, because I'd like to know.
Yeah, that's what I was
hard being.
Okay. I for me, I think it, I'm going to say time management. And I'm going to say, but for me, it was, oh, I was okay with it because my high school prepared me a lot for that. But I did see a lot of my teammates struggle with time management because so much was required of us to practice. We did, and then not going home too, you know, it wasn't like, okay, we had to be there in the summer. Like you didn't have to, but you kind of had to. You know, based, especially if your grades, if you needed to catch up and make sure, you know, you were eligible and you needed some courses in the summer and then to train. So those who were homesick, I think I was the farthest away. That was hard, not being able to get to my family as much, not being able to go home for Thanksgiving. I don't think some people realize, so, you know, going to teammates who may be closer because you had to turn back around. We're in season. Not being able to stay home extended periods of time for Christmas. You know, just some of the sacrifices that you had to make, especially if you weren't local. That was hard for me. And then sometimes, you know, it was internships, being in the J school in Sherrill, you know, it was things that we couldn't do as student athletes because it conflicted with our athletic, you know, life and what we had to do for our athletic requirements. So that was hard. Especially when you knew, like me, I was a realist. Like I knew that if I went pro, it wasn't going to be for years. So I had to, you know, I wanted to take some of these internships and different things, but it just, you couldn't do it really because of the schedule.
So I see you have on your Hoop-Fi shirt. And for those who don't know, well, I'll let you explain it. But the Carolina men's basketball team talks about family. That is their thing. Family, family, family. You know, I think it was born from Coach Smith and, you know, through Coach Guthridge and Doherty to Coach Williams and now to Coach Davis. Can you tell me about the women's side of that and how you all are like a family and how, if she has, how Coach Benghart has kind of kept that going?
Yeah, so you know, Hoop-Fi, that's what we say, that's our saying. You know, that's our organization now. We actually have formalized Hoop-Fi where we have a board, and I'm part of that board. Myself and my teammate Tiffany Tucker, we actually have a page on Facebook, which has helped us kind of stay in touch. It's an alumni page. And you know, we worked very closely with Coach Hatchell and her staff, obviously, because we all of us had played for her and Jennifer Alley too. Some of her players are part of Hoop-Fi too. And I actually worked for Jennifer Alley, who was the coach before Coach Hatchell. So that was kind of a bridge there. Courtney has definitely worked to keep that relationship. You know, we have had Zooms where we've had to gotten a chance to interact with the current student athletes. It really, to me, is what the players make it in terms of being a part of the current staff and connecting with that staff and those players. But Courtney has definitely worked with us. You know, Tori is no longer with the program, but that was kind of our liaison to Hoop-Fi. She just left this, I think, last year. But now we're working, I believe, with Megan. I just got an email from her about our alumni day. So they do recognize the importance of keeping the alums engaged and involved. And Hoop-Fi is our way of just that bridge, the alumni group. I wish a lot of us could be, were more local, who could get back and kind of talk to the players now. I was on campus back in May, and I had a chance to stop by practice and ran into Paris Key, Rashonda and the camps were there. They thought we planned it, but we just were on campus and stopped in. And so Coach Benghart was really gracious. We were able to watch practice. We talked to the players afterwards, took pictures. They let us sign the alumni wall. So they have extended and they understand the need to keep the alumni connected. Because, you know, you never know how that can help your pipeline. And as a player, I used to love seeing the alumni come back, you know, seeing Marion Jones come back, Tracy Reed, Chanel Wright Green, just seeing them in the stands and come back for Alumni Day. To me, that it helped, you know, it helped you have that connection with those alums once you got out and you could ask them questions about life after the collegiate landscape.
I'm going to ask a fun question.
Yeah, go ahead.
Do you have a deep question or a fun question?
No, go ahead. Let's be fun.
I'm stealing your questions again. What was your favorite place in Chapel Hill to go eat? And is it still there? Because, God, it's changed so much.
It's changed a lot. So Spanky's was one of my favorite places to eat. And I love Sutton's. I mean, Sutton's is obviously, you know, I went there when I was back in May too. So that was like, but if we had a little money and that we were going to spend a little bit, we were going to Spanky's because they had some really good baby back ribs and mashed potatoes. And so we used to go there a lot. Yeah. I mean, obviously Timeout after you got out of Players and Treehouse or Gotham or Avalon. But, I really didn't eat that because I didn't, I'm sorry. I may be the only person that didn't, doesn't think Timeout is all that great. So don't.
At like 1 o'clock in the bullet. Morning, though. At 1 o'clock in the morning.
After a long night.
I mean, I guess, yeah. But then you wake up the next morning, like, what the heck did I just put in my stomach? So I don't, I would rather just suffer through. I used to like Miami Subs too. And I don't think that's there anymore either. So yeah.
It's a place. It's a place called. Is it what's Sup Dogs or is it What's Up or Sup Dogs?
Sup Dogs.
Yeah, that's yeah. where Miami Subs. That's it. The former Miami Subs location. Now
we actually ended up with a high chair from Miami Subs in our apartment when I was at Carolina. Don't ask me how.
How did that happen?
How did it walk from Franklin Street to behind the fire station? But yeah, that's my memory of that place. How is it to go to Chapel Hill and see how much it's changed since you young guys were there?
Yeah. Like, no, I was there, like I said, in May and I actually had my son with me, who at the time was probably, I think he was 6 months old. And so, it's so different now, like even going into Carrboro, it's just very, very different. I mean, I went to Sutton's because that's a staple. I didn't walk too far down Franklin Street. But, I mean, the campus is still, to me, the same. I can navigate it. I mean, there are some, you know, they've had some renovations done. But Franklin Street is very, very different. And different in a good way. You know, change happens. I mean, but, yeah, I don't – a lot of those places I don't even reckon. I think it was like a Thai place and some other – I think, is there a Krispy Kreme on Franklin Street? No, maybe not. It's a Target. It used to be. Isn't there a Target going down? Yeah. So, yeah. If we would have had a Target there when I was there, it would have been a problem. I go to Target like 3 times a week. It's really bad. I have a problem.
My son's a freshman up there, and he stays in Granville.
Yeah.
And he's like, I need something. I was like, go to Target. It's right there. I mean, it's ridiculous how much it's changed.
See, this is why she is an athletic director, because she's so positive. We see what she said about, oh, change is necessary. Change is good. Like, no, I want it to be exactly the way it was on June 5th, 2004. I wanted to change. I want everything to be lined up. Miami Subs and Players and Avalon and, you know, Timeout over here, McAllister's down here. I want everything to look exactly the same. Yes, it's been 16 years, but that's again, that's why you are where you are, because you have a very positive attitude about things. I wanted to ask one more kind of high level question before we let you go, and it is very, very high level. So if it's too high of a level, let me know. But really, I just want to get your feel for how much women's basketball has changed since you played, like how different it is, the styles, the players, all that good stuff.
Okay, so. It's a lot different. I'm going to just talk about appearance. We wore baggy shorts. I looked at my Letterman's jacket. I just brought it out. I'm coming back to Carolina next week for homecoming. And I had my jacket. I'm like, why did I get this thing so big? And I was much smaller then. And I'm like, this is like a football. It's like an XL in men's. Like, I feel like a medium in sweatshirts and stuff in men's. I'm like, why would I do that? And then I looked at our uniforms. Like, I was wearing those, like, practice shorts. I wore those while I was pregnant. And I'm like, why did I have these shorts this big? Now girls are in full glam. I don't know how people, we used to clown people who wore makeup when they played. Now, we may have put on some waterproof mascara if we had a television game. But anything outside of that or got our, you know, fresh braids done. But now girls are just decked out, lashes, nails. I don't know how people play in nails, because I'm like, my nails are like way too long now, and it's like, I don't know, it's different. But I mean I get it. With name, image, and likeness, you might be trying to get a deal, so I'm not mad at the girls. I think they look beautiful, but it's definitely different. The rolling of the shorts that look like diapers, I can't get with that. I can't. You can wear little shorts, but you don't have to tuck them in. Like, that's too much. But it's different. I think the style you're seeing more, you know, I was a short post player. I think girls are more versatile now who are taller. You're seeing them be able to be wing players and handle the rock. Not really in the traditional roles. But outside of that, I think it's pretty much the same. It's good to see that people are coming out to games and that the popularity is growing, because I did, you know, I go to the Final Fours and I really felt like the women's Final Four was better than the men's this past year. So we'll see what happens with Minnesota and New Orleans.
What do you think the women's game can do to build more viewership interest from, you know, because there's still a big set of folks that are just like, women's basketball is boring. I mean,
right.
So how does the game change that? Because I actually think when it's being played well, it's more pure basketball, yep, rather than just a bunch of guys that can run and jump and dunk. How does the game get more followers?
Yeah, I think the dollars have to be invested in the sport. I mean, that's coming out now with the NCAA gender equity report. It takes money to make money, you know? And so you got to pour the same amount of resources into what you're doing for men's basketball. It makes no sense that women's basketball is just not being branded as March Madness. You know, the availability, because we were even talking about the brackets. Like, you see the men's brackets all the time, but you don't really, you got to go search to find the women's bracket to fill out. And so I think that the relationships, I think people have to do a better job of telling the narrative behind some of the women's story, because again, those women typically are going to be there for 4 years, where a lot of the men are one and done. So you can really develop a rapport, a relationship, and getting those ladies out in the community. I think that helps too. You do see areas, I feel like it's definitely grown from when I played, the fan base. And even when I was working, my initial working at DePaul in the Big East. Now, you saw Notre Dame has always bought fans. UConn has always bought fans. Tennessee, you know, you have those fan bases who really show out for women's basketball. But I think now more people are getting behind it because it's fun. And then making the atmosphere. You got to create a lively atmosphere. You know, that goes into your marketing teams and what they're doing as well. Because we don't have the dunks. Now, I mean, you have some girls that can dunk now, but consistently dunking the basketballs. But how do people leave, or how are they feeling when they're in their game environment? And to me, that goes to creating a lively environment where there's somebody on the mic, there's a DJ, it's lively, you have your video board. But I really think getting the players and talking to them and sharing their story and narrative, it helps create that connection. And little girls need to see women in these roles, because representation definitely matters. And so the more visibility that these female student athletes can get, I think that's going to help the game to grow.
Well, JT, Jennifer Lynn, we really appreciate you joining the IC podcast. I have one just quick question for you. So for those who don't know, her husband played football at North Carolina Central. Who is the best athlete in the family?
Oh, obviously me. I mean,
you notice how she got quiet.
Yeah.
I was like, because I was trying to see if he's listening, and then I'm like, I don't want to go into too much detail. But yeah, I'm clearly the best athlete in the family.
Then she gave me the, like, why are you asking me this look? You know the answer. Like, why are you asking me?
You know the answer, Sherelle. Yeah, like, you know, back. Now, my husband's he's pretty nice, too. Like, he got some hops. But, yeah, when we talk about the total, I think my IQ from the game, and he's a football player, so it's different. But, you know, football players always think they can play basketball.
Yeah.
And I'm like, stay in your lane.
Well, again, thank you. We really appreciate it. Have you ever been to Johnny T-Shirt? On Franklin Street.
Yeah, I'm planning on going there. I have to get some gear. I went there the last time I was there and bought some items.
Well, did you know that they are the official sponsor of the Inside Carolina podcast?
Boom, I like how you did that.
Did you know that?
I didn't know that they were the official sponsor.
A place where Inside Carolina subscribers can get 10% off their everyday order by simply using the code found on the premium message boards.
We'll hook you up with the code.
Thank you, Sherelle. Please, I need the code. I like codes. I got to get a lot of gear. You know, my husband's a Duke fan.
Oh, my God.
You know, it gets, I know, right? It makes it fun. especially during basketball season.
Irreconcilable differences.
Yeah, that's a
house divided. Really.
Well, like Sherelle said, I appreciate you taking time to join us. It's been an enlightening and fascinating conversation with me. I could talk forever about this stuff because, you know, I interviewed a young lady earlier in my real life, and she's early 20s. She knows what she wants to do, and she's trying to get there. And I could see her following a very similar track in her field as you follow to get towards the top of it, really, to be honest with you. And it's been great to talk to you. I appreciate it. And like Sherelle said, we're sponsored by Johnny T-Shirt, johnnytshirt.com. And, you know, if there's anything we can do for you, certainly let us know. But thank you so much.
I appreciate it. Thank you guys for having me. And I'm glad we were finally able to get the time. Thank y'all for being flexible. So I appreciate it.
Always. Thank you much.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.